coming around.
Yes.
So welcome to the meeting of the Clark County Development Disabilities Advisory Board. And I'm Ted Engelbrecht, and I'm asked to chair this time because someone elected me vice chair when I wasn't here.
And then that was on Monday night?
First was not here today. Anyway, I have to remind you that all the proceedings of these meetings are recorded. So please remember that when you speak, and before you speak, if you would introduce yourself, that would also be useful. So we dispense with minutes because you can access them on the website. And the order of business starts then with the most important part, the community input. Do we have anybody with community input? Susan.
I would just like to let you know that Canine Companions for Independence, who provides these fabulous service dogs for people with disabilities, is holding a dog fest walk and roll in September. It's September 13th, 2014. It will be held at the University of Portland campus on the other side of the river. I understand you can get there using Mass Transit. And it is a great opportunity for fun and camaraderie. It says grab your leash, so it's not just for service dogs, it's for any pets. Fundraising supports teams. When people apply for a service dog through Canine Companions for Independence, they're provided free of charge, but you do need to go to Santa Rosa for 2 weeks of training. You learn everything from answering questions and dealing with the public to caring for and keeping your animal, your pet, healthy. You're not a pet, it's a service dog, really. The dogs are provided free of charge, and they come with a lifetime of follow-up training and care. And so Canine Companions for Independence, their mission is to enhance the lives of people with disabilities by providing highly trained assistance dogs and ongoing support to ensure quality partnerships. And so they're coming up on their 40th anniversary, and this is the first time we've done something like this in this area. It's their national fundraising. There's dog fests all over the United States. And me and my puppy-raising colleagues, who are already volunteers, are now putting this event together. So any support is always appreciated. You can go to cci.org/dogfest, and it'll show you where the events are occurring around the United States. And you can register. You can create a team. You can email all your friends and they can do donations online to your team. And it's going to be a fun event. Hopefully the weather will be nice on September
13th. No cats allowed.
Well, you can bring them because our dogs are really trained. Well, the cats might chase them, but any dog in a yellow or blue cape would not dare chase a cat. So I can leave this.
Can you leave that? Because I know I need to get it to the R.
Yeah. And my colleague had a really good idea. I have one of those little signs on my classroom. So he said, I'll just stop by and take a picture of it so I'll remember everything I need to know. So it saves paper.
Oh, yeah. Anybody want to
take a picture?
Okay. Since your phone is
right. Digital.
Yes.
Thank you for that. Anyone else?
I just want to remind everybody that the Community Summit is happening next month in Wenatchee. And if you're not registered for it, it is an excellent opportunity for us to all get together. It is being put on by what was Ellensburg Employment, and the residential conference is now being rolled into a Community Summit that is held once a year. So.
And if you need a stipend, if you're going from the board, then just see me. If you need a stipend, get your names in, because they're already up at almost 800 people. And I don't think it'll hold over 1,000. So, and I have to approve the stipend.
It's June 17th.
Yeah.
17, 18, 19.
One of the problems this year is they didn't coordinate with the school in terms of when school gets out. Yeah, till the end of that week. That is, I think, fatal flaw. But we'll work with it about next year.
And then the other piece of information I just want to share is that the date has been chosen for our candidates forum this year, and it's going to be held at Clark College, and it is October the 15th. So please save the date. We will get out and officially save the date.
And this is for all candidates?
For all candidates for all positions.
What day of the week is that, please?
It's a Wednesday.
It's a Wednesday.
What time does it start?
Probably 6:30.
Okay. Camp Clark College.
Anybody else? Then we're. Kristen's there.
Is she here?
She's at the door.
She's at the door. Okay. She left again.
Should we go to B first?
Sure.
Can you, we have Meredy, can you talk to us about the transition conference?
Yes, Ted and myself and Leanne attended with Meredy the transition conference that was held at the Hilton last Friday. And Dr. David Bank was the keynote speaker. Transition being my passion. There were three things he said. There's three components for success. Meaning, resources, and relationships. And with meaning, it's not just a job but a career. And I thought this was an interesting take. He said college is a new career exploration rather than high school. So that was an interesting observation. But everything needs to have meaning and resources. We need resources, financial, emotional, spiritual, physical, hidden rules, role models, building, want to build resources for life and circles of support, which I think that when students go through the person-centered plan, I think that's a great place to start cultivating that, the circle of support. And then relationships with intentional relationships that have purpose. The other piece that he talked about was reciprocity and not only getting things from a community, but being able to give back to the community, which I thought that enhances your life as well as that of others. And he gave the example of Habitat for Humanity, where they have kind of parallel tracks that they have people helping build, and then you also have the investment of the person that's going to get the house because they have to put in so many sweat hours. But it's also that feeling good and giving back to the community. This one was, the main thing is to keep the main thing.
The main thing.
The main thing. He also talked about having 10 friends lessens isolation, and I think that can be really critical for clients, for anybody, you know, if you get isolated, it's not as good a thing. And all jobs have value, and I think that that's something to remember now, is that to value all jobs, because it all makes the community work together. And of course, the biggest predictor of success is the variety of work experiences. And I think that schools are starting to, I remember when I started 30 years ago, you know, we didn't have as many things, but as it's grown, the schools are doing a better job of integrating in communities and getting students unpaid internships, if not paid internships or paid jobs, which is the goal when they graduate, but having them being connected with the community, because the more experiences they can have, the better the success when they do get paid work. So those were kind of the things. Yes.
Was his keynote taped?
I do not know, because the state was kind of in charge of this one, and they're not efficient about putting on conferences as wide. So I don't know.
Were there handouts, Mandy?
In the sessions, in the morning,
we got to the keynote.
There were, but in the
from the keynote, no. But yeah. You know what? I have a lot of his material, so I'll call him and see what he's got.
Thanks. And then we have breakout sessions in the afternoon. And I went to one on the communication pieces, and I think that technology is just exponentially expanding how people are communicating and more effectively and better between people, and also for jobs. And just for, I think of sequencing on jobs or for anything, there's just so many things that are inexpensive or free. And the other one I went to was, they were talking about from the Center for Change and Transition, all of the information that they have available up there, which is tremendous.
Okay. Can I ask something? I went to one too. There's a school in Oak Harbor. Mm-hmm. And that school, the woman up there has done amazing things. The transition, and they don't just work outside of the school, they work inside of the school and inside the community, and they start working from forever. And it's just incredible, the list of things that, if you can get a copy of that, the list of jobs that they have is absolutely incredible. They get into whole communities involved. And they have, you know, special needs people working alongside of with other individuals as well. So they might just not be a special needs
person.
So the inclusion, as far as that was a lot more impressive.
So all of their students have to do something?
No, but a lot of them do. But this Oak Harbor, yeah, she was. So what they do there is, man, I've never seen anything like that. And I asked Seth, yeah. Asked her, is that kind of typical? She said no.
Well, maybe we can get her to get some more material on that. Because it's an easy ask.
And the other one I went to was the breakout when they were talking about how Snohomish and Seattle are working together. It was wonderful to see two counties kind of coming together at all levels, and that would be a real model for the other counties that were attending. Were all, can you come and show us out? Can you come and show us out? It's very exciting.
Good.
What was the numbers that people? It
was well attended.
Whenever it was, they had a waiting list to get in, and they were turning people away. So,
was there many schools people attended?
I think there's somebody from Vancouver and Evergreen. Not as many as you would like, but there were two.
From Evergreen. Did you say parents?
School.
Teachers.
Ridgefield, Brook Hunter.
Oh. Candace and Candace Ford.
Candace Ford.
It was on a school day, and state testing, which is pretty much in the whole month of May.
You were there, Mona, weren't you? Do you have anything to add? No, you weren't
there. No, but we can get materials and see that they get to people who want them. I know you want them, but there were some good ideas.
Mm-hmm. The young man that spoke, and he was amazing. Yeah. He comes from
King County,
and was just very good talking to the client and to people just in general, but about his experiences and getting a job, and it was really, he did a really good job.
Yeah.
You mean the man with Down syndrome?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
He was amazing.
And I think he might be somebody that we want to hear come again, because he had a great perspective.
Vanessa, are you ready?
I am.
Then we would like to invite Vanessa Gasson from talk to us about health reform and integration.
Where's the? Can you hear me in the mic or how do you hear me?
I'll set it right here. I'm Vanessa Gasson. I'm the director for Clark County Community Services. And Mary asked me to come talk to you guys kind of about some of the changes that are happening with the state's 5-year health care innovation plan. And a lot of stuff is happening pretty fast. And so I'm going to try to give you guys a very high-level overview, because some parts of our program are much more detailed because they're more involved in it. So feel free to ask me any questions, but I'm going to just try to give you that overview. So let's go to the next slide. So Washington is one of the first states that decided to implement healthcare reform. And their whole goal is by 2019, they want to make sure that we are looking at an integrated system for the Medicaid population, but they actually want to move it to the commercial side. They want to make sure that we have a healthier population, better care for individuals, and they want to look at how do they reduce costs in the system. One of the things people like to ask the question about is, what are they fixing? What's wrong with the system? So this is one of the main problems, is they feel like they have a very fragmented, siloed system. So if you look at, this is currently how Medicaid dollars are delivered throughout our communities. So there's two main state agencies that are involved. So Healthcare Authority, which is HCA, DSHS, Department of Social Services. Healthcare Authority is the lead agency for Medicaid in Washington State. They currently manage all of the Medicaid for the long-term, long-term care, but the physical health and low to moderate mental health. And they have contracts with five managed care organizations. There's four of them down here in Clark County. That's where they directly are working in our community. DSHS currently has contracts for the other areas, which is substance use. They do outpatient treatment through the county, so we have a contract with the state, but they manage the inpatient services at, for themselves up at the state, and there's about six facilities across the state that they manage, and everybody has to share those six facilities. There you have, many of you have heard of the regional support networks. They are currently 11, there used to be 13, there's 11 of them. Those also have direct contracts with DSHS, and they are kind of, in a sense, health plans. So they manage and subcontract down to providers, and they handle the more chronic severe mental health. And then the long-term care physical disability, those are the AAAs, which are the area agency and agent. We have Southwest Washington Area Agency and Disability. That's how they, those contracts come through DSHS. Next slide. And again, for them, they feel like this system is very fragmented. It's very heavily focused on fee-for-service, which means you get paid more the more you see. Not necessarily are you healthier. So they want to change that to move more to performance-based, and they want to move to more of a coordinated system and make sure that payment is more global and more focused on performance. There's two main components to this plan that they have. I mean, there's lots of elements I'll talk about, but there's two main pieces that everybody's focused on right now. One of them is a two-phase process to actually integrate the Medicaid funding. And I'll go into that a little bit more detail, which is a drastic change on how we deliver services now. The other piece is after much, much advocacy, really helping the state to understand you've got to include local stakeholders in this process. They've agreed to look at what they call communities of health, which is a regionally based kind of process where you include providers, counties, tribes, you include consumers, families, other stakeholders in how to best look at transforming the system. This five-year plan just got recently passed during the last legislative session. It is 2572. This is probably, it was Representative Eileen Cody was the sponsor of this bill. And these are the elements that are in the bill. And one of the biggest things that they so the first bullet actually got the governor about a month ago actually vetoed that part out. So the Senate wanted to make sure there was a checks and balances, and the governor decided to remove that Joint Select Legislative Committee. So that no longer exists. He vetoed that in order to pass the bill. But the rest of these have passed. And so there is the creation of regional service areas. So every county currently right now has until the end of June to decide what region do you want to be a part of. And the requirements are is you have to be in a region where you are connected to county. So we couldn't choose to be up with Seattle or King County. So we got to work with the counties that are most partnering with us around healthcare services delivery, also mental health and behavioral health, transportation, all of that they want us to look at. So that we have to be kind of in a way where we can be coordinating and conducive to how we're going to be sharing services. The other piece is, as I mentioned, is the integration of Medicaid. So they're going to align their procurement and how they purchase Medicaid services to these regions. They're also going to have these communities have health in each of the regions. And then they also want to just make sure that we're looking at the database. So they're going to try to do a statewide database that everybody has to use. And then they want to look at this performance measurement committee, which is really going to talk about, we want to start with Medicaid, but we want to move it to the commercial side. And then they're talking about actually the employee benefits for state as the next movement. So they have big plans for what they want to do. I want to talk a little bit about the community of health because that's a lot of work I'm doing right now. And this, again, is a regional organization. And they want them to be independent, either nonprofit or private partner partnership, or private public-private partnerships, to look at how do, next slide, how do you address the major health issues in your region. So they want us to be looking at how do we do a region-wide needs assessment. They want us to be kind of the central area where people can get some shared services. They want to be able to have us be the kind of the conveners of all of the different diverse stakeholders to look at how do you bring people to the table to solve problems. And these communities of health have to include a very wide diverse stakeholder. So as you can see, the bottom bullet of who they want to see, and that's not all inclusive. The list is much longer. But they want to make sure that no one organization or government or funder or whatever is dominating these. Everybody is supposed to come and have equal votes and have some kind of equal responsibility. So, next slide. We are involved in that right now through our Southwest Washington Regional Health Alliance. I'm going to talk about that in a little bit, but we do have that regional organization down here. Go back to that. This is the piece that a lot of counties are spending a lot of time on right now because it is fast-paced and some decisions have to be made. So as part of this integration of Medicaid, and as you remember those siloed systems, the goal that the state wants to do is take four systems, combine them into one, and send them down through managed care plans. So in order to do that by 2020, because that's the date they want this to happen, is they're going to try to phase it in. So the first phase is April 1st, 2016, is to take the mental health and chemical dependency systems, combine them, and send them down through what they call behavioral health organizations. So RSNs technically will not exist because RSNs only do mental health and only a portion of mental health. This is actually mental health and chemical dependency, and so that's going to change how everything operates. So these are brand new organizations. They're also looking for regions who are interested in possibly being experimenters, early adopters, to look at full integration of Medicaid before 2020. And if you do that, they're willing to offer you any 10% of estimated savings where they see either reductions in ER visits, emergency room visits, or whatever, that they, you can take it back to your community and reinvest how you see fit.
Where do they think the savings is going to come from?
It's going to come from emergency rooms. It will probably come from the high-cost services. So each health plan has very specific targeted outcomes that they have to meet. And the biggest ones are like the ER rooms, unnecessary surgeries, those kinds of things, those very high-cost services. For mental health, it's inpatient costs that you are actually looking at doing more upfront views instead of trying to wait till they're detained in the evaluation and treatment centers. So they're starting to kind of hit everybody and say, can't wait till they get chronic anymore. You need to be looking up front and try to help them much earlier than what's been happening before. So people are being penalized and being required to pay back some money.
When you say people, do you mean
the systems, the providers, the health plans, anybody involved in that? Because it's not just the health plan. They pass down those outcomes to the hospitals. RSNs pass them down to the providers. Everybody's trying to be held accountable right now.
What's the quality assurance measure to make sure that families are still able to get their needs met and people are able to get in and get the services that they need?
I would say right now that probably hasn't been adequately addressed right now because the systems are still very separated and there's no real way of trying to figure out how to coordinate when the systems are still siloed. What they're saying when the funding is integrated, they are talking about there is going to be a kind of an oversight kind of function. Whether that's the legislature or the state agencies, they're talking about that will provide, and counties are asking to be at the table because we want to see the data. And then we're also, and they're trying to include consumers in that conversation, but very early on because we haven't done integration. So that hasn't been addressed yet because we still have the same systems in play. So, next slide. So I'm going to talk about the Regional Health Alliance because a lot of us in this community, particularly in Clark, Skamania, and Cowlitz, kind of saw this coming down back in 2010 because the state started telling us about it. A lot of communities didn't take it very seriously. They thought healthcare reform would never pass in Congress. Well, it's here, and Washington was one of the first states to hit the ground running. So what we did was we started off as a collaborative. It was the counties, the three counties, Clarksvania and Cowlitz, came together, public health and human services, along with the clinics. So we had CMAR, we had Free Clinic of Southeast Washington, we had Cowlitz Family Health Center, we had, what was it, New Day Dental. We had all the clinics come with us. We invited the hospitals. They weren't ready, so they kind of chose to step back for a while. The behavioral health providers stepped up. Clark College was very active. And we came together as a collaborative just to say, how can we do things differently? The state didn't take us very seriously, because this is back in 2010. It wasn't until the last year that the state actually passed legislation to actually allow such an organization to have a role with healthcare reform. So we created a 501c3, because now we have the hospitals at the table. Go to the next slide. And what we were looking at this time was to try to do something similar to what's happening in Oregon. We can't do the same thing because we don't have the same legislation. But we were getting some learning lessons about how they were bringing the health plans to the table with the providers and talking about how do we transform the system and hold each other accountable, but at the same time take advantage of any savings and jointly decide how things change. So what we talked about, and this is kind of more of the human service side pushing, is this is a larger conversation than just healthcare, medical care. You've got to talk about what they say in the healthcare neighborhood, employment, education, housing. All of that matters to it, whether someone's healthy. So yes, we want people to get access to primary care, but you getting access to primary care isn't going to make you a healthy person. You can see a doctor, but what happens outside the doctor's office is really where you are determining if you're healthy or not. So we want to make sure human services is not disconnected from the health side. So we fought to make sure we had a voice at the table, and I would have to say we are public health, human services, the providers, the Clark College, all of us. We very much have a role as a part of this. We do have some health plans there. Right now we have two. We have Columbia United Providers and Coordinated Care. And Molina is the third one that's possibly thinking about joining the board. We have Legacy, Salmon Creek. Let's go to the next slide. I think I actually have them. This is the actual board members for the nonprofit. And as you can see, we tried to have representation from all of the counties in the region. Clickitat really lobbied us to be included in Southwest Washington. Now, there is a dynamic there where Goldendale wants to keep a little bit of Yakima. But the rest of Clickitat County feels like Southwest Washington is more where they probably would either access specialty care or whatever. Yeah.
Are there families on the board?
We just invited consumers, because that's a requirement of the community health.
Right.
So we are, because I'm going to talk about the expansion. I don't think I have a slide on that. We just expanded the board to where we have Jared Stanford from Lifeline Connections. He is going to join. We've invited CMAR, so a gentleman out of Seattle. I forget his name. I think his name is Frederico. We've invited Molina. We've reached out to the RSN, Southwest Behavioral Health. We are trying to find, there's like two consumers, and I don't want to mention their name because they haven't sent it yet. So we have invited people who are either consumers in Medicaid until we can get them to confirm they want to do it. I'm not going to say their name out loud because then I'm going to have to go by and get some more of the consumers.
Well, and can we get consumers who have developmental disabilities?
We can look at that. We can look at that. I would talk to Mary about how you guys want to engage. Because I did have to talk to Mary, but we need to make sure that you guys are understanding the changes.
I'm sorry. But Molina and mental health and the RSN and all those kids, they have no idea how to take care of our population of individuals, and they're all clueless. So when I look at those guys up there, I'm like very concerned because I don't know that there's anybody up there I take my kids to. So if we're looking at how do we change Medicaid, you know, I mean, really, that's concerning.
And I will tell you, the reason why they're there is, and there has been a change recently, okay? The change is
as the counties are moving to change regions, Cowlitz County is looking at going to a different region. And the reason for that is because Clark County, Skamania, and Klickitat, the border counties of Oregon, are looking at, should we be early adopters for full integration of Medicaid? Cowlitz County is not ready to do that. They want to look at the BHO model. And so the state's telling us all counties have to agree on one model. So the three counties that I mentioned that are border counties to Oregon are seriously willing to have a conversation with healthcare authority about how do we do this earlier, because we think we can change and influence instead of waiting to 2020 when it's just kind of forced on us. The Cowlitz County, we respect their decision, but they're just not ready for that change. So they're going to look at, can they do a BHO, and they're having conversation with Pacific, Lewis, Wakayakum, and possibly Grace Harbor. They will make a decision, I think, in the next 2 weeks if they do that. If that happens, then some of these members will not be on the board because they will now move up to the region kind of north.
Well, and as far as Medicaid, or individuals with Medicaid who have experienced developmental disabilities, a lot of us are currently traveling to Cowlitz County because there's nobody in Clark that will take our Medicaid that can see our kids and treat them appropriately. So, yeah.
So that's, well, that has been brought up to Cowlitz County about how are you going to deal with the medical issues. And I think there's a meeting Monday with the Cowlitz County government. The commissioners are going to have a work session with the state. And the medical side has made that very known that it's not just development, it's other kinds of, especially here, that happens in Cowlitz County, that they will possibly lose out if they go with a BHO route. These providers, the ones that are left, there's about over 100, probably about 100,000 people on Medicaid in Clark alone. And we are unique in the situation because the rest of the state, a lot of the federally qualified health centers step up and see that population. We don't have that here in Clark County. CMAR, which is our federally qualified health clinic, probably only sees about maybe 10,000 Medicaid. Vancouver Clinic sees 60% of the people on Medicaid, followed by Peace Health, followed by a share between Legacy, CMAR, Kaiser, and some of the other smaller providers. So we're like, before these private providers determine that this is just not worth it because the reimbursement's so low, we need them at the table to help solve this problem, because what's happening right now is they're starting to limit access for adults with Medicaid. And so we need to address this, and we can't wait till 2020. To address it. We got to address it now.
To get a doctor is very difficult for someone on Medicaid or even Medicare. I know a retired woman who cannot, she's low income and she can't find a doc.
The reason why the health plans are there is because they're the ones going to get the money. And so we need to have a conversation with them to say, how are you going to use the money? What are you going to pay the providers? And we need to have a conversation about prevention, because we can't spend a whole lot of money on the most high-cost care, because then the money will be eaten up. And there's no way we're going to be able to provide the care we need for all these people that got on Medicaid. The state grossly underestimated who was going to join Medicaid expansion. I think they only estimated about numbers of about 150,000, 200,000. Over 300,000 people joined the Medicaid expansion program. They never thought they would get those numbers. That's all I had. Did you have a question?
Well, I guess I'm sort of remembering a project in Clark County. I can't remember the name of it. Maybe you can help me. Sharon Pessett was the ED. We did it in Community Choice Healthcare Coalition.
Community Choice is 2010.
And that was a healthcare kind of coalition kind of thing. And it seems like we did some, it wasn't specifically focused at Medicaid, but it seems like the follow-up grant for that didn't occur. And so the recommendations and suggestions of that group, which met for at least 18 months,
met for years.
Yeah, several years. That some of that information might be useful. I mean, is that
some of
them have archived, or are there people?
Some of the same people that were part of that Community Choice, because actually I was part of Choice when we put it in our business, joined the RHA.
Okay.
And so let's go to the next slide.
That's good to hear that we're not just reinventing the
wheel. Yeah,
we're
not. And that's why we brought public health people who were part of those efforts
just kind of came to the RHA because Community Choices, just financially as an organization, were struggling, and then the board made a decision to just shut it down.
So here are the key principles that the RHA board tried to grapple with, because as you can imagine, there are competing interests on that board. I don't have the same interest as what a health plan would have. I don't have the same interest as what a primary care medical provider would have. They don't have the interest that I would have around chemical dependency or housing. So we're trying to come to the happy medium of what can we agree to. This list probably was about 40 things long, and then we took votes to say, what are we willing to agree to as key principles? And this is what we came up with as far as, at the time, the five-county region with representation. And we mean this because we're not trying to duplicate efforts. We're trying to bring these efforts together and to try to convene and have these conversations and build on what works and fix what doesn't, or recreate or transform something different to help people that currently or have not gotten care in a very long time. So, and we're not just talking about treatment, clinical treatment. We want to make sure that there are some work evidence-based practices or work in the community around using community health workers, different kind of models that can really help the community take some ownership in a lot of this. So we're willing to kind of put everything on the table. Let's go to the next slide. These are kind of some of the RHA partners. Of course, it's not all-inclusive, but these are the ones who have been most active and involved in a lot of the different work groups. Again, this will change because we're not necessarily talking about five counties anymore. Depending on how Calis decides, we'll probably be looking at three counties. Next slide. The work groups, we created these six work groups to help determine how to build this community of health based on the requirements that the healthcare authority gave us. So, go back to that. So we have a lot of different stakeholders. Now, we do have families and consumers on these different work groups. So we do have a lot of them are participating in the clinical models here. I think there's like two or three of them on that group. And so we're trying to figure out, what do we do? How do we put this infrastructure in place? Healthcare Authority has just put out an RFP to give $50,000 to the different areas, create these communities of health to help us with planning and infrastructure. Their goal is to get two pilots to work with and contract with starting January of 2015. And so we plan to submit to be one of those pilots. What we are grappling with, though, and what disappointed us was, in the legislation, the community of health, we really wanted it to have a decision-making role, because that's the place where you could have all these diverse stakeholders come to a place and have some say. They actually removed that and made it advisory only. So we just feel like there's no teeth, okay? So it's an advisory committee, but those health plans don't have to do anything that we think is good. They can kind of do what they want to do. So we are looking at, okay, that's a good start, but is there something we could do different in Southwest Washington, because we are unique, because we do border Oregon, and we do have a lot of people who go to Portland for care. So we are looking at, can we create a coordinated care-like model similar to what's happening in Portland, more around like the health share coordinated care organization. So we are exploring that, and we will be the only probably area in the state that would do such a model. Next slide. So, of course, this is huge impacts to county government. Like I mentioned before, counties have to make some serious decisions in the month of June. So counties are all over, are just running crazy, doing work sessions and educating their commissioners, because they've got to choose regions. And they've got to decide if they want to do these behavioral health organizations, or if do they want to try to do full integration of Medicaid early. And, of course, counties have a lot they have to think about, but these are some of the elements that they have to think about as they make those decisions. I personally, because we spun the RSN off 2 years ago, which was a major transition and major disruption, can step back and objectively ask the question, what's in the best interest of people that haven't gotten care probably their entire adult life? You know, they were in emergency rooms, or they just didn't get the care. I personally, now as I learn about the medical side, and trust me, I have never been so much involved in medical in my life, dealing with the hospitals and the health plans and understanding where they're coming from. I think we need to look at being an early adopter. Because if you put the money together in a global budget, I was talking to my staff up front, right now what happens is if you have a person who has diabetes, who's overweight, who suffers from depression, but who's self-medicating, they've got to go through four systems and figure out how to navigate that to get help. And some of those systems, you have to be so chronic that, meaning your situation is so severe, you almost have to be hospitalized to get the care. And figure out for somebody that's going through all that, how are they supposed to know how to navigate all the systems? Well, that's what's in place now. Creating a BHO is just taking two of those systems and putting them together. You still got to navigate all these separate systems. If you put them in one, and then you allow kind of the community to sit at the table with these health plans and transform the system and do things differently, you will work at how does this person get an assessment for everything up front. It will incentivize for them to not wait till that person gets so chronic that they end up in the emergency room because that costs too much money. So they will look at, can we do some kind of preventative care? Can we do that assessment? Can we get them in treatment much earlier for the mental health and chemical dependency? And for me, that's what this is about. How do we help these vulnerable people get better care? So I think sacrifices have to be made, and we've got to be able to look at how do we move the system in a different direction. Is there going to be mistakes? Absolutely, because we've never done it. We've never integrated the systems. Do we know how to do it? Not sure. But we have learning lessons from Portland who have been working on it for 2 years. And they will tell you what not to do, and they will tell you what works. Next slide. Questions. Again, very high-level overview of something very complicated. The one bill is about that thick. It's just a lot coming at us real fast. Yeah.
Are you sitting on the board of that group over in Oregon that's doing that?
No. We actually do have some of the people that actually created some of those that are now on our board.
Okay.
So like John Hurst and right. Tricia Roscoe and that. So yeah. So they're bringing their knowledge over of what works. And one of the things they're very clear about, which healthcare authority is thinking, you know, we need so many health plans because we got to foster competition. We've got to give client choice. They actually feel the opposite. They actually think you need to narrow it down because what happens is there's not enough dollars, and when you make people have to choose between health plans and they don't like this health and they're bouncing around from doctor to doctor, you really need to invest in how do you put some money up front. And not so much specialty care, but put more money in front for prevention, primary care, and early assessment kind of stuff. So we'll see. We're going to meet June 6th with the state, and we're going to be working with representatives from, I don't know if anybody's heard of the Healthy Living Collaborative. Has anybody heard of that? It's a public health initiative that's looking at some prevention-based kind of things in the community. We're going to sit down with the state and kind of tell them what we want to do. And we're trying to work on the agenda right now and put a little bit more to it and see if they will agree to kind of pilot with us to do something different. If so, then we're going to go into intensive planning. We don't have a lot of time because they would like for us to start January 1st of 2016. We're going to have some community forums after June 6th. And probably having in Clark, but it's closer for Klickitat and Skamania, so we'll probably do something in East County to look at how we educate the public, get people more engaged and involved where they want to be involved, but hear what the concerns are to make sure we know what to look for, because we don't have all the answers. And we can't have a 50-member board. So we need to make sure we got the right people at the table, and some of those people may fall out.
And so, sitting where we sit and knowing, because I've been on Oregon's mailing list since before they started sending stuff out, I get it all the time. With them having OSHU there, mm-hmm. and right now, if we have a family member who needs something, they have to go to Children's in Seattle, or they have to go to Mary Bridge in Tacoma. How are we, if we set up something that's a tri-county, and Oregon's not taking our reimbursement rate, I mean, how does all that piece work?
So, you know, Senator Annette Cleveland
put a bill forth to allow border counties to do contracting back, bi-directional contracting with both states around Medicaid. I heard that that didn't pass. Actually, that wasn't what I followed, but I was following these other bills, but I had heard it didn't pass. I think the House had some concerns with it. It probably be reintroduced next session, and if it does, it helps address what your concern is, because then there will be an agreement between the two states on the reimbursement. Now, for mental health, though, we do have a limited agreement to send to Providence for the children, but that's about it. That's about it. So there's more work we can definitely do.
Other questions?
There does. We have two children. What do you call it? Be told they can't be served there. One recently, one a long time ago, right?
Served where?
At Providence. Because they just couldn't deal with them.
They just didn't have the skill set to meet our children's needs.
Yeah. So they just send them home to the family.
Say good luck.
Yeah, kind of.
Yeah. I'm sure that's in here somewhere, but can you tell me why the problem is?
So it's a regional support network, and it's there's 11 of them across the state. One is a private health plan called Optum. The rest are county-run, and basically they operate like health plans. So they manage the public mental health system. They subcontract with providers, and they do everything from crisis to recovery. Other questions?
Well, thank you very much, Vanessa, for that. Wow, that was a lot.
It's a lot to digest, and
thanks
I think
for putting up on paper. And I would say thanks, Darla, for asking some really good questions. And I hope that you will take note of what she asked, because those are very important questions, I think.
Well, I think we can set up some additional meetings with some of you and Vanessa, too, because she's been really involved now.
And I would say if you are interested in participating, you need to get with me so we can plug you in the right way, because you do have a lot of experience and knowledge. And I've been telling Mary, we need to make sure that every community is a part of this in some way.
Okay. Well, that's great. And was minuted.
Huh?
It was great, and it was minuted. Your invitation was minuted.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you.
Okay, the next on the agenda, we have Trish is going to report to us.
And by the way,
great and outcome project highlights, excuse me.
And currently, the waiver services for developmental facilities are carved out pretty much every place in the U.S. where we're doing this.
But if we do full, complete roll-in, inclusive roll-in, is what she was calling it, wouldn't that include the waiver services?
Not yet, no. This is, but your health care. So you have to pay attention to the health care part, because the health care part is important for all people.
Yes.
The DDA services, no, not right. You know, we don't know what's going to happen there yet. But the waivers are the medical and some of the other kinds of things, or dual diagnosis mental health.
Yeah. Okay. This is Trish McConaughey. Thank you for having me tonight. I just wanted to give the board a brief update on a project that I've been working on. Mary assigned me to take a look at our rates. So the rates that we pay for employment services in Clark County, currently we pay $75 an hour for employment services and $47 for what we call career development, which is basically phase one, intake and discovery of employment services. What we found when we took a look at the rates, and this is important particularly right now as the state has now moved to, the whole state is now using hourly rates for the services that we provide. In the past, there's been tiered rates or flat rates in certain places, and we've had hourly rates for about
Since 2000,
so 14 years now. And so we took a look at the rate, and we looked at our rationale. We actually had a rationale for why we decided to pay the rates that we do, that was developed back in 2005. the rates that we currently pay. And that was based on the desire to be able to pay competitive wages to the staff doing the direct work. And those wages were kind of backed into figuring the amount of the number of billable hours and some of the costs that our employment agencies might incur in providing these services. When we reviewed the rationale, it still stood up, so it was good. And so my project quickly became not just a rate project, but then it turned into an outcome project. So what are we getting for this money that we're spending on our employment services? And as part of the project, we've looked at some data. We've looked at some data with you all. We'll be publishing it in the near future. And one of the things that we found, we broke out our data by acuity type in Clark County. So as you recall, each of our customers that we work with are assigned an acuity level based on an annual assessment administered by the Developmental Disabilities Administration case manager. And that will give each person a low, medium, or high acuity level. And what we found is that in Clark County, we have about 75% of our customers with low acuity are currently working. So that leaves us around six-ish more people with low acuity to find jobs for. And remember, low acuity means people that have lesser support needs associated with their disability. So when we look at people with high acuity, that number plummets to about 15% of those customers that we serve are currently employed. And here's the news, is that we have more high and medium acuity people to find jobs for now. So, you know, most of those people with low acuity, they already have jobs. So this is the kind of profile of the people that we're working with, are people with the most significant support needs associated with their disability are the people that we're currently working with to assist them to find jobs. The bright spot in this is that in the state of Washington, so Washington as a whole, has tripled the number of people with high acuity that are working in the past 2 years. So that tells me it's possible and it's on the rise. So that's good news for us. So that's one part of our data. Mary occasionally will ask me about why certain people are not employed, so a name will come up, and she'll say, well, why doesn't that person have a job? And I used to get really stressed out by that question, because, of course, they should have a job. That's what we're all here to do, right? Well, my answer now has changed a little bit, and I've come to the conclusion that we've gotten what we've gotten so far because we've done what we've done, and we've gotten some great things. We've got most of the people with low acuity jobs right now, but we're still figuring out those people with the most significant disabilities. But the good news is that they're on the way up, so the numbers are increasing for those people that are working. And so now it's time to do something a little bit different. I went to the Ellensburg conference, or the community summit, last year in Ellensburg, and there's a woman, Serena, from the Office of Disability Employment Policy from the feds. And one of the things that she was saying to different states who were in the room with us is that you got to pay for what you want to buy. And so that's what we've been putting a laser focus on lately. And we're still kind of trying to suss out what potential changes that we want to make to contract policy or how we pay and what we pay for, because those are really our three leverage points that we have. Contracts, policy, and how we use the funding that we have available. Any questions?
So do you anticipate any changes in the rate structure because of desire to maybe get more for what you're paying for? I mean, the assumption I got when you were speaking was that there's an association between the bang for the dollar and the cost of providing a more intense support or services or the quality of that services may actually cost us more money in order to reach those that need our services the most. Is that thinking right now?
Yeah. Potentially, people with, well, I'll say this, is that people with high acuity currently can get more hours of service per the Washington Administrative Code that was implemented or started a few years back.
Okay.
So, yes, so the costs will be increased because people will have additional hours of service that are available and may need service. The ideas the idea about the cost and the idea about supported employment in general still is that people will do fading. I also saw the states looking at their data, specifically around people with high acuity, and one of the things that they found that deserves, that I think deserves further study, is that about one third of the people in their sample had successful outcomes, were working more hours, and staff were able to fade. So these are people with high acuity, and about two-thirds of the people, it was still having very intensive staffing over time. So I think that there's still a lot for us to learn about high acuity customers, and I'm telling anybody who will listen to me that I think that we need to do something with an N1 design around the successes that we're seeing in the state of Washington and in Clark County, because we do have examples of customers who are working hours, you know, a good number of hours, working, you know, not full-time, but maybe part-time. Mm-hmm. But when we're looking at, you know, the statewide average for people with high acuity being employed is around 15% of the people that we're serving in the state, and the hours are lower, you know, less than we'd like to see for people. It deserves further study.
Now, has that changed over time? It's 15% today, mm-hmm. but...
Well, and maybe, you know, I was at a meeting recently and I said, you know, where they were talking about, well, only 40% of these people that are in this program to get people out of institutions are employed now after 2 years. And I said, 40% of people are employed after 2 years? That's great. So maybe I need to say that differently. These people maybe are the people that nobody ever thought would work. So we've got 15% of them employed, so now we just need to do more of it.
Acuity is within the last 4 or 5 years concept. So
yeah, last year or two.
Then it got real in the last year or two. So I don't think we have a fair comparison, but my sense is that a lot of people, while Washington is still number one in employment, and we do as good a job or better than any other state, people with the most significant disabilities have traditionally been still left behind a little bit. But I think now that there's a little more focus, I will, you know, and we've been working with VR on that.
Well, the technology that allows access and independence and all that is good.
Mm-hmm. And we have people with that are very significantly impacted by their disability, have a lot of support needs associated with that disability, that are supremely motivated to work.
Oh, yeah.
So, I mean, it's, you know, which sometimes you can have somebody who might not have as much, their disability might not be as evident, and they might not be motivated to work, which could be a bigger problem sometimes than maybe somebody with more needs associated with their disability. But if that person, you know, wants to work, then, you know.
I
just met, you guys might remember Andy Owens from, he works at Powell's bookstore in Portland, and you've probably seen the video about his job. I was talking to his mom, Cynthia Owens, at the transition conference last week, and, you know, she said it was all Andy. Andy was the one that wanted to work. He's the one that kept telling me he wanted a job. And so she was saying that she credits him in being the driving factor behind the success of his job because he really wanted it.
Our speaker then had the same thing where he wanted to work for him.
Mm-hmm.
Do we have? Do we still go to 6:30 or 6:45?
We can be done whenever we're done.
Well, because we have two more agenda items, so we don't want to go past time.
There is no set time.
There's no time.
But you can set one. Tonight you can.
So I can be done. I just wanted to kind of introduce you to the idea of this project that I've been working on, and so there'll be more to come.
Maybe you answered this, but I'm not sure if it applies. Would it be possible to have an adjusted rate to incentivize the vendors to maybe take on more people with high acuity?
I think that's an idea worthy of thinking.
I mean, I guess I can see it possibly if you're a vendor and you know that you can bring in someone with low acuity and probably get this turn or get them a job pretty quickly, and then you can get another one and get that one pretty quickly. So there might be a tendency, maybe not. I mean, we hope that, and we think especially some of the vendors have the best of motivations, but it might be an incentive for them to focus at least more of their energies on the people with acuity.
There also does seem to be a loose correlation between the agencies that pay their staff a little better and the outcomes. What is the
paragraph? New information.
It's rough comparison.
Okay, that's all for me.
Thanks. Sorry, I didn't interrupt you. I thought it was the time.
Who was
next we have the October event update. And it says committee.
Well, and you're on the committee, and you're on.
I wasn't
on.
Mm-hmm.
And Walter's gone, but he's.
Yes, Mary, you're up again.
Yeah.
Well, I believe we had a conference call, and it was October 8th that they were looking at at the Heathman, thank you, this year.
And it's been signed, so
okay.
It is
so
definitely
Heathman on October 8th.
Heathman, October 8th.
Are we arranging some special busing for that or not?
We need to talk to Walt because that is the only thing about the Heathman. But they were also $600 less than the Hilton.
And they hired people with disabilities.
Right. Well, that's what we wanted. That's the problem with busing, right? That was the problem.
Transportation, yeah. But so we can see if Walt can maybe help with a shuttle of some kind.
And our speaker and the
county executive is working on the proclamation, and then Susan and I were going to go to Camas.
I was, in fact, after I saw that email, because I wasn't a part of the conference call.
Oh.
I ran into some of the council members at Caps and Taps one evening, and your gentleman, because he's not the mayor now, right?
He
was
the city manager.
City manager. Okay. I'll say it was the mayor.
No, but we can get a proper from whomever.
Yeah.
But you and I can go visit with. Mm-hmm. And Walt was going to do the others, and we didn't ask him before he left. So I don't know about that, but I think there's lots of things happening. And
who's it? Kelly's going to agree to.
Kelly Parker has agreed to MC again. What else?
And then nominations will be sent out. In this spring, right?
Yeah.
We do back in August?
Yes. Because we've all already gotten an email about one, and so I think the first thing they put
last time we went, the schools were not informed last time. I think we need to make an effort to inform the schools this time, because none of the transition teams, for example, the people involved, they didn't know about it. I shouldn't say none, but no, I know what mom, you would never do this.
There is a meeting. Can you remember? Yeah.
That's next week.
Right, and I'm going to be coming from another meeting, so if something stops me, if you would bring it up to Evergreen, I will bring it up to Vancouver.
Yeah, and I'll be... we'll do that, I think, May 22nd.
Okay.
For September, so that includes Davik, Nancy, Vancouver, Evergreen, and Cameron.
Can you inform Cameron?
Yeah.
Okay.
Rick?
Lori.
Okay. So the last thing then is the
update.
The bus already took off.
Yeah. And so just one other thing, it's not really new business, but there was a special education conference out at Prairie High School 2 weekends ago. I didn't personally attend. I don't know if anybody here did. My puppy raising group does an information table out there, and it's always really fun for them. And Aubrey, she was in the kennels. And so I didn't go. But... was it Arousing Success? Trish, were you and Kristen there?
I was there, and it was pretty well attended, like it usually is. I think that they were expecting more people than they had last year, so it just continues to grow. One of the things that I'd like to point out is that the vast majority of parents that I talked to at the table that I had there for Clark County, we're not connected with DEA. So that continues to be a concern, and so I was giving out the DEA. And then when I found their table, I sent them over to the table. So I gave out the number, but then I thought, oh, wait a minute, you can go talk to them over there. So I was sending DEA a lot of business that day. So,
And then the weekend before was the all-inclusive APEN, and we had about 800 kids, however many families that translates to. But they take the football stadium and they make a huge resource fair around the outside of the football stadium.
McKinsey.
And it was very well attended with a lot going on. Families, again, just looking for those resources and that information.
Can you say that again? What was that?
It was the all-inclusive Easter egg hunt.
Well,
you know, speaking of people seeking resources, my school counselor, I work at Liberty Middle School in Camas, but at one point in time, she came to an event that was sponsored by the county where a whole bunch of different service providers in all different areas were there, introduced themselves, gave a quick spiel. But she has like a binder that has people's cards in it that she collected at that fair at that point in time. I don't know how many years ago it was, but she's like, there needs to be another one of those, because it's not just the families that need information to pass on. It's the counselors and the teachers and the staff.
I think that's what the Prairie High School has taken. Because this has limited space here.
Okay.
And Prairie has kind of, it's morphed from Leslie's little project. And then we had it here one time when Leslie was still doing it, and then she hunted, and Annie Lombardo from Prairie High School has taken it on and is doing a wonderful job.
Mm-hmm.
And she's agreed to come. She was supposed to come and talk to you all this year, but she got sick, so she's going to do it next year. Yes. And if you want a table, any of you out there want a table? Yeah. It is costing now.
Any other new business?
I'll just make a quick announcement. The housing group that is being headed up by Sandy Silvera, we are having our housing summit part A next week. And we're looking forward with great anticipation to the kinds of, again, looking at options for people, for families, who have children growing up and who are looking for housing. What's the ideal housing situation for their child? So,
This is by invitation.
Oh, okay.
Last night, the transition Informing Families was about housing, and a woman that attended has property. And so she's asking, she has a child, but she also has property, and she's trying to figure out what she wants to do, what would be the best thing for her to do on this property.
Maybe she should be invited.
You know, they were making connections last night. Sandy was there.
Okay.
So.
Okay.
I also met the woman that had that advertisement for a like mother-in-law apartment.
Oh yes, they're great.
And she said she hasn't gotten any calls about the unit. So yeah, I know. I thought, really? I said, oh, that's gonna go fast. And so she said, no, not really. So I don't know.
Well, if it's a real mother-in-law one, then you have to be a family member to live there, don't you? If you're saying it's like a mother-in-law, that's different.
It's kind of like a mother-in-law.
It's like.
If it's like one, that's possible. If it is a what they call a mother-in-law one, then it can only be family members. That's what I understand from our...
Yeah. Our neighbor was just talking about that in our cul-de-sac because they wanted another neighbor to build a mother-in-law, and it was that it had to be a family member. And so then his question was, well, if they sell the house, then what do they do? You know?
You get the mother with it.
Any other business? There being none, then the meeting is adjourned. Thank you very much.
Thank you.